You will walk, you will talk, everybody will gawk at the man about town. From the start, you'll be smart, you will break every heart, you're the man about town, and I know...
It's hard to imagine a more talented, more hilarious cast with more Tony winners than the group now appearing in Young Frankenstein at the Hilton Theater on West 42nd Street, the musical comedy which, as I'm sure you already know, is based on the Mel Brooks Gene Wilder movie from 1974, and it stars Roger Bart, Andrea Martin, Megan Mullally, Christopher Fitzgerald, Shula Hensley, Sutton Foster, and Fred Applegate. It is with great pleasure that I welcome to this show Roger Bart, who plays Dr. Frederick Frankenstein, and Andrea Martin, who plays Frau Blücher, the mysterious housekeeper at Frankenstein Castle, to this show. Hello.
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 Pleasure to be here.
Andrea, Roger has worked a lot with Mel Brooks in recent years. Have you done anything with him before other than audition for Life Stinks?
Wow. You've done your research. I'm so impressed.
Well,
now
you know,
I'm
you know,
answer every
well, you know, there,
you ask me.
There was a challenge here. I must admit to that it's a bit intimidating to interview someone who has been a regular witness to Bobby Bittman's incredible techniques as an interviewer. So I thought I might actually do a little research.
No. How about that? That's my answer.
That you had,
well, I forgot the question, but I think the answer was no. I've never worked with Mel Brooks. I've gone out for a drink with him because Nathan Lane's a good friend during the producers, and I auditioned for him many years ago, and so this is a dream come true for somebody in comedy.
I read that you've deliberately chosen not to do a lot of comedy in recent years, and here you are getting lots of laughs as Frau Blücher.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the creepiest characters possible. So creepy, the horses neigh every time her name is mentioned. It must be a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. That's interesting. You would say the horse. You know, I still don't know why. Every night I pick a different reason that the horses neigh. Sometimes I think it's because they love me so much and the audience doesn't know what a horse sounds like out of passion or laughter or joy. Sometimes I think it's creepy. It keeps me going.
I think most of the people in the audience think it's because they fear her.
Yeah.
Is it true that Judith Anderson was one of the inspirations for your portrayal of her? Dame Judith Anderson?
It actually is. I went to a video store in Brooklyn to find some other DVDs of other Frankensteins, and the owner knew all about the genre, and he said, you know, I think you should watch Rebecca, and I don't know it, and he gave me free the DVD, and that was it. It really sold me enough to keep me away from trying to do an impersonation of Cloris Leachman,
yeah. Who did it wonderfully, but that is always a problem for anyone doing something like this, and I'm sure it was for you as well, Roger. Gene Wilder not only was wonderful in the part, but he wrote the part.
Yeah, right. Double whammy. No, I was a student of his, I think, certainly after I got the part, and studied both the movie and all the scenes, and I tried to take away from it a lot of the tone that he brought to the movie, which I thought was so smart and so likable, and he was wonderful to meet. He came early in the run. And I think it wasn't so much trouble to have to follow him, but a privilege to steal his great stuff and hopefully kind of make as much of it as I can my own.
I heard that when the producers were still in previews, Matthew Broderick, and you started nudging Mel to write a Young Frankenstein musical.
We did.
I guess you were sure that the producers was going to become a monster hit and he'd need a follow-up.
Well, I know early on in rehearsal, I was playing Carmen Ghia, and one of my first lines was, "Hello, I am Carmen Ghia," and we had talked about the idea of having horses winning. But that idea, I suggested just a woman screaming and the crash of a plate instead every time I said my name. But when he nixed that idea, I thought, well, maybe in the back of his mind, he's thinking, I'm going to put Young Frankenstein on Broadway. I don't want to lose that line and that bit. But we already were, it seemed, a big crowd pleaser in Chicago when we first were talking to Mel about it. But he didn't, he didn't really respond that great to the idea. But the more champagne we poured into his glass, the more he seemed open to the notion of it. But thank goodness he's sat down and decided to do it.
Other than in animated films, is this the first romantic lead you've ever played?
Well, I've played a lot of, you know, when I first started out, I played a lot of parts in regional theaters and small theater companies around the country. And I've also been involved in the development of so many shows that have come to Broadway and unfortunately didn't come to Broadway and never saw the light of day. But in those, I did play a lot of romantic leads. But this is certainly the biggest one on a big stage where I get to actually kiss the girl as opposed to, you know, stand alone in the corner playing a French horn and some, you know, on an eve of the building.
Well, actually, I heard that you wanted to play Igor.
Well, when they had done the reading of it, they let me play the part of Igor, and it was great fun. And they had offered me the role, and I think that they had searched for a Dr. Frankenstein for some time. And when they met Chris Fitzgerald, who they were absolutely delighted with, I think that they found that the more potent combination was going to be me in this part and Chris in, as Igor. And I knew Chris, and having him seen play the part now, I realized that he would have blown me off the stage anyway. So.
Well, this is an interesting part to play because you've described him as coming from a long line of sort of mad scientists and people who've been known for being delusional, and you have to play him as though you're taking him at his word that he's the normal one, although there are hints from the start that he may be a bit eccentric
as well.
Yeah, a
bit crazy, yeah. Just open the right window and he went flying out, a little crazy. You know, I tell you, both my parents are MIT scientists, and their parents were biology and chemistry teachers, so...
They must
Quite
have
frankly,
loved the set.
I was going to say they did, yeah. And I come from a long line of mad scientists myself, so this is sort of the perfect thing. I didn't do that well in school. I certainly would never have gotten into MIT, but I'm able to kind of at least pretend I'm really smart on stage every night. So it's worked out kind of wonderfully, you know, and it is great to play an eccentric and somebody also who has a very youthful and... innocent take on the world to believe that through science he can kind of, you know, beat the system, and that's kind of a fun thing to play every night.
My guests are Roger Bart and Andrea Martin, two of the stars of Young Frankenstein, which is at the Hilton Theater on West 42nd Street. In your case, Andrea, your big feature song, He Was My Boyfriend, is one of the highlights of the first act. And you've said that you're grateful that it doesn't come later in the show.
Well, I'm a warrior, Lenny.
Warrior or warrior?
I'm a warrior and a worrier. Whatever you choose. Whatever seems the most flattering. I think if I had to think I have a song later in the second act, I'd be thinking about it for the whole first act. So, you know, I'm also happy to do that song in the first act because I think it really establishes another side to her, which is her great passion and need to have Victor von Frankenstein's work be carried on. And so I think it establishes a nice balance for me. So I'm not just thinking about how to be weird or how to be a mysterious housekeeper. So I'm happy to do it there.
Well, she also has a generous side when Victor refuses a nightcap of brandy, warm milk, or even Ovaltine. You'd offer him a Grand Soy Macchiato.
Macchiato, right. That's right. Yes. Well, you know, she sees something in Frederick. She sees Victor in Frederick. I don't know. You know, I love that, actually, what Cloris did in the movie. There was this kind of unspoken flirtation that it was so enigmatic and very difficult, actually, to do on such a big stage, do that kind of subtlety. So
it feels a little bit like the man just landed on an island all filled with women, you know, and just anybody should just flirt with anything that walks in the castle that's living, breathing male.
But I look in your eyes and I think that Victor is there. Well, this is my stuff that an actor does that makes for really boring information on this talk show. But this is what I do to keep me going every night.
But you also talked about that huge theater, and it is a big theater. It's a big theater when you enter it, let alone the stage being immense. Does that make it tougher? I mean, this is a very physical play. Does that make it tougher because you got so much ground to cover?
Well, we played
Paramount.
The Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington, before we came here. And I guess psychologically, it was great for us. It was actually 1,000 seats larger than this.
I didn't know there were that many people in Seattle.
Yeah, and they showed up.
And they showed up.
Great.
They
did.
They were fantastic.
But I like these big houses. Yeah. I enjoy them. I think they're fun to play. And with the size of the physical set and everything. And the bigger the house, it allows for the bigger the mugging. So Andrea and I are really right at home there.
Well, I think that the theater is a great place for this oversized castle and Transylvania, and so I actually feel strangely supported on that stage. I don't feel dwarfed by the sets. I feel like the whole world from the time you come in and watch it. We're all kind of in this larger-than-life world.
And we also got a lot more toys into our show, a lot more of set pieces that really make it so beautiful. Yeah. A lot of the other houses on Broadway just couldn't accommodate us, and we wanted to have a great-looking and exciting laboratory with that wonderful bed-like thing that Inga and I float up on. We couldn't have had a lot of those toys in any other theater, so I think we lucked out.
Yeah.
Well, how does doing a show like this compare with something like Oklahoma or Fiddler on the Roof?
In size, do you mean, or satisfaction as an actress?
We don't want to compare.
No, so then I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Well, it's a much larger stage. I think Oklahoma isn't exactly an intimate musical, and yet it feels intimate in comparison to this.
You know, that's an interesting question, actually. Oklahoma's set was quite minimalistic, and in that way felt like you were on this huge territory in Oklahoma, and this feels like a larger-than-life castle in Transylvania. So both of them worked. One had enormous sets like we do, and Oklahoma had very few. But because of the set designer's talent, they actually supported the world that we were in. And Candide, did you ask about Candide? It was just a big, oversized circus. That was, that was something. Mm-hmm. That was really something.
Do you think that the sets and the costumes in your case, Roger, this is the first time in years you haven't been fastidious? You were as Carmen Ghia, and you were as George Williams,
right? But as Snoopy, I bathe myself. I'll just say that on NPR, but I was far from fastidious. But yes, it has been a while since I've had a good wild haircut, and what a relief!
You're on the stage for all but about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's correct.
That must tire you out.
Did I
ever say that you're my hero?
It's
you're
a fun ride.
Wow.
The night goes quickly, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, it really
does. I'm never going to complain again. 10 minutes is all you're not on stage for?
Pretty much.
Wow, you're a star. Okay.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Andrea Martin and Roger Bart of Young Frankenstein. Here's Andrea singing... He was my boyfriend.
Love dances in honor of him. I thought maybe I could direct it, but I never expected a guy like him. He was a bully and a brute. He was as crazy as a coot. Still I didn't give a hoot. He was my boyfriend. With every woman he would flirt. He always treated me like dirt, but I was happy to be hurt. He was my boyfriend.
We've been the pride of Romania since 1201. Passed on for generations, father to son. Descended from gypsies, as proud as we can be. Don't risk my curse, it could be worse. Embrace your family tree. Join the family business, learn the family trade. Make yourself a monster, make the world afraid. Join the family business, you must take the family name. Follow in our footsteps and you'll win eternal fame. The rope.
We're back with Roger Bart and Andrea Martin, two of the stars, along with Megan Mullally, Christopher Fitzgerald, Shula Hensley, Sutton Foster, and Fred Applegate of the current production of Young Frankenstein, now at the Hilton Theater on West 42nd Street, directed by Susan Stroman. Have I left anything out?
That was Kevin Ligon singing Victor von Frankenstein, but we just came from break. I don't know if your audience heard that.
Another wonderful performer in this. And even though there are a whole bunch of Tony winners here, there is a real ensemble feeling. Was that something that Susan stressed when she was directing the you, or is it just something that you all fell into?
Since I'm maybe not aware of what ensemble feeling is, can you answer that? I don't know. I don't know what he means.
Ensemble. Well, yes. Are you being sarcastic?
Yeah, I mean, ensemble meaning everybody is very
gets along,
talented and gets along.
No, but also, they're, it's not a star-driven show the way some shows are,
yeah,
where everybody, you know, Angela Lansbury comes out, everybody applauds.
That's right. For me, they usually just go like this.
That's all you deserve.
I think there is great fluidity in this cast. I think everybody, it's kind of like a CTV in a way, actually. Everybody stands out on their own and can stand out on their own. But miraculously, we all blend. It's kind of a fluke, really, when it happens. I don't know if you can ever set out to say, this will make a good ensemble cast, because it's so much to do with chemistry.
It is. And it's a small, for a big space, as we were talking about before, it's actually a rather small show. We don't have a lot of bodies on stage, you know. So unlike the producers, which had a lot of scenes and excuses to have many people sort of walk up and do 5 lines here and 10 lines there, this is often just up to the 6 of us or 7 of us to sort of constantly tell the story and work with each other and try to pull it off every night, you know?
In the producers, you played how many different roles over the course of the run?
I played Carmen Ghia for about a year and a half and then Leo for about a little over a year.
Is that weird? Switching to another part completely that you watch somebody else perform
Matthew? It can be a little bit at first. There is some wonderful thing about originating something. It's all your business. It's all your crazy construct. And Matthew, when I would listen to Beatles albums over and over as a kid, I can pretty much sing them through just like any of the Beatles. And so what happens when you take over is you often hear your predecessor's voice and intonation before you, and you find yourself talking like him and moving like him, and it takes a little longer for you to make it your own, but eventually you shed those things and shed Matthew. As much as I loved everything he did, you eventually try to make it your own.
You mentioned earlier that SCTV was an ensemble group. Was that your breakthrough? Because there's a website devoted to the all-star production of Godspell that you were in Toronto, and I wasn't sure whether that was your breakthrough, or was it when you played the bookish sorority sister Phyllis in the Canadian slasher film Black Christmas?
Well, it all depends on what you mean by breakthrough. Breakthrough to my relatives? Godspell, I would say. No, Marat, my part is Simone in Marat Saad at the Deirtre Summer Theater was my breakthrough. let's see. Godspell was my first real big thing in Toronto, as it was for Gilda Radner, Marty Short, Eugene Levy, Victor Garber, Paul Schaefer, an extraordinary group of people. But SCTV was, I guess, the breakthrough enough to get me on the Johnny Carson show, to really make it a North American breakthrough, because I was in Canada with the other projects you mentioned.
And for you, Roger, was it Snoopy? Because you'd been around for a while.
Well, if I had seen that cast do Godspell, I'd be a religious man now, frankly. But I don't know. Snoopy was fine and really did pave the way for a lot of ASPCA ads for me, so I've made a huge dent, I know, in the canine community. I don't know about the artistic community. Where I really became world famous I hope people at home understood that I was facetious just then. World famous.
Yeah.
Was really doing George from Desperate Housewives. So I've,
yeah.
I can really...
Not the George Carlin show.
No, that was quite under the radar. No, I really can creep people out all over the world now, which is really thrilling.
Roger, did you know, you didn't know this, I'm going to say it really briefly, that I got my equity card doing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Oh, you
playing
did?
Lucy, yeah, when I just graduated from college. I wished I could have done Snoopy with him. Oh, my God.
I know. It was a lovely show.
That would have been cool.
It was great fun.
But George Williams, you said people really believed you to the point where when you traveled to other countries, they snickered when they saw you because they thought you were that crazy guy.
I've had groups of teens snicker, you know, while seeing me in small towns in France, which was both flattering and slightly infuriating. I think that there's sort of a perception out there in the world that somehow I wasn't in on the joke that I was creepy. That's the only part, you know, that like somehow I just did it and they just thought I was creepy. I was sort of had Frank Burns-itis, you know what I mean? Everyone just thought, oh, look at him, he's just a bore.
Oh, my God, but, you were so good in that.
But it was a lot of fun to do, and they wrote wonderful things for me to do, and we laughed all the way through it. And as one of their executive producers and directors said to me as I was making my last episode and filming my death scene, he said, this, Roger, will be your Gilligan. And I thought
that was going to ruin your career because
people would only
think of you as George Williams.
Yeah, well, we're working our way out of that.
But why did they kill him off? Because he just couldn't go any further.
Too good.
I mean,
that's
already
what I
killed.
Heard. It was too good. The girls were starting to complain.
He'd already
a lot
killed
of fan
a husband.
Mail. I know. I was killing everybody in sight. I think they were afraid of everybody's health on the show. You know, I knew that when they started getting the A storyline about two or three episodes in a row, I thought, you know, I think my days are very numbered. I'm going to start charging things. Stop charging right now. But I think that they had to, as it's obvious, answer, they had to rotate a lot of crazies like me to the company so that the women on that show have something to play that's fresh. Uh-huh. And God knows, you know, as the world knows, Marcia Cross just needed to get some, and I wasn't that guy, so.
Well, it could have been called Desperate Pharmacist or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's why I pitched it, believe me.
My guests are Roger Bart and Andrea Martin, two of the wonderful cast members of Young Frankenstein, now at the Hilton Theater on West 42nd Street. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You've said, Roger, that you avoid reading reviews. All reviews?
You know, there's something about being... I was on the road for about 2.5 years straight, and when you've read... when you start reading reviews out there and you realize that they just are... so different, and you realize it's just not worth reading them because you tend to, I bet I can speak for Andrea too, you know, you tend to sort of focus on the negative of it, and you can obsess over it. You know, the thing about, you know, doing a movie or something like that is, or television, mostly a movie, I should say, that you do the work, you get your review, and it's already done. You don't have to kind of go back to work. Maybe you wish you could change something, but... you know, we have to go out every night and kind of continue to do it. And if somebody says something along the lines of, you know, I just hated his nose. I hated his nose. Or he speaks
get
nasal.
A nose show.
How about that? He speaks so nasally. It drove me nuts, but this, you know, droning on. That would really affect me for the remainder of the run.
It would
upset me so much. So I try not to read them. Matter of fact, you know, like George Bush, I really don't read newspapers or at all.
You don't?
No.
I read a review of Merry Wives of Windsor that I did 10 years after I read it. I thought, okay, it's got to be safe now. I was so depressed because it was a really bad review for me. 10 years later, that's not good.
But you've had so much affirmation.
I have had good affirmation, but here's the thing. If it's good, it's never good enough. If it's bad, it's devastating. If somebody could say you were brilliant in that part, your acting was great, and then I would think, well, wait a minute, didn't they like my singing? You can't win. It is one person's opinion in print, and that's what makes it,
makes
so
it
powerful.
Tough.
So
yeah.
Were you surprised when you won the awards? For example, Roger, when you got your Tony for You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, or Andrew, you've won, a Tony Award, a Theater World Award, two Drama Desk Awards. I would think by now you would be review proof.
Oh,
gosh.
Wouldn't that be nice?
How about that?
You know, no, but I know.
The reviews
after I know what you're talking about.
For the people who were not in the producers after that, they were the most amazing reviews ever for the producers. And then we went on to do a next show, and suddenly we weren't so liked anymore. You know, you really go through it.
Good to be an underdog. I find people that have been really trashed for a few times that you think, yeah, okay, I know I'm due for another one. It's a ridiculous world we live in.
Now, have you talked about this, Roger, with your uncle, Peter Bart?
I have.
I mean, after all, he's the editor of Variety and a major figure in the interviewing machine.
Yeah,
wow.
We have.
Is that
you know,
true?
He offers obviously a unique and large perspective for me. And he, you know, like myself, regarding critics, believe that. Well, specifically the New York Times, I think it would be such a bad idea to bring back a Sunday critic with a second review, because I always found that the Vincent mm-hmm. Canby reviews on Sunday, accompanied by a wonderful artwork by
Hirschfeld,
was a wonderful and flattering thing for the theater. It made it, I don't know, something
more
exciting about seeing the faces
so.
As
yeah.
drawn by mm-hmm. an appreciating cartoonist. And so I missed the second review from the New York Times. And the other thing that I think critics in general, and I think Peter would agree with me, is that I think that they should rotate the mediums. I think that they should review movies for 3 months and then maybe review theater and then review television mm-hmm. and review books. I think that I think it would offer a great opportunity for them to change their world and what they're reviewing and keep them very interested, and also kind of lessen their power as an individual over the theater.
That's
and,
great.
And bring in fresh perspectives, because I don't think you necessarily need to be an expert in theater to write a review about the theater, and I don't think you need to be an expert in movies to write an intelligent review about movies, and I feel like that would really help all of us. So that's how Peter and I usually speak, and you know, and fortunately, it's always a stimulating conversation, a stimulating perspective.
Well, this show has gotten mixed reviews, but I think it's kind of review proof, don't you think? Because of Mel Brooks, because of how much people love the movie, because of how much they appreciate the performances.
Well, I tell you, we haven't really felt the ramifications of the reviews. I've been in other shows, and I bet Andrea would agree with me, where there is a terrible feeling the day, you know, previews have been wonderful, and then the bad reviews will mm-hmm. come out, and the audiences for that week and the weeks that follow seem
About
to bring
10
the...
days, I think that's the
That's right,
days.
They bring in the reviews really, with them to yeah. some extent, but we did not feel that, did we, Andrea?
I did not, no, I don't think we did, and you know what?
But people don't go to Sardi's anymore after the show and sit around and then wait for Walter Kerr's review to come
no.
in?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I remember doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, when we were just starting out. Yeah. Oh, I remember one night. Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't want to think about that. It was for a friend of mine. Oh, dear. It was terrible. And I actually thought it was going to be a great review. And we started reading it together. And it was just the most scathing review for him. We didn't feel it. And you know what? We don't feel it with the audiences. I have to say it is a jovial place to spend 2 hours and 40 minutes from what we can feel, the audiences and from us. It's wonderful entertainment, really. If I weren't in it and I was watching it, I'm sure I'd feel that way. Wonderful mm-hmm. actors and funny jokes and beautiful choreography. And I don't know, the audience are disproving whatever mixed reviews came out.
That's true. And we come in, we try to, you know, we try to do our best and
yeah.
have, make people laugh and have a great
yeah.
light evening. And I don't think you can kind of – it's not really a show you want to go in. You can easily find its flaws, but I think a lot of people have a wonderful, wonderful time every
yeah.
night. And so
that's also because everybody in the cast seems to be having such a good time.
We are.
Even Shula Hensley, who plays the monster wonderfully, by the way.
Yeah.
And Megan Mullally, who loves the monster more than perhaps she should.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Really, everybody, Megan and – Sutton and Shula and Chris, everybody's so enormously talented. Fred, really.
It's interesting also to do a show that was, you know, created in 1974, you know. There are not a lot of, we don't revive a lot of things from the 70s,
That's
you know, and see how they play in our current sensibilities, you know. So it's great to do Mel Brooks because people love his material and it's 1974, you know, and it's not too old and it's not...
Yeah.
Just recent. It's still just loved and beloved by everybody.
Well, later I'll be talking with Ian McShane about a new production of The Homecoming, which is still shocking after
yeah.
40 years.
That's right.
About that.
1965.
Yeah.
So, you know, things, yeah. it's shocking, but it's not shocking in the way I think it was in 1965 because
That's right.
the
and
world
the
has changed.
The Ritz was on Broadway this year, too, and that was, I don't know what year that was, but it feels like it was early mm-hmm. 70s, and that was still...
And now you're doing Putting on the Ritz.
That's right. Except we're clothed.
Now, can we just spend a few moments on some of the other things that you do? The movies, you, Andrea, are on a regular feature on Elmo's World, for example, on top of everything else.
Elmo's World. Oh, I love doing that. I do the little voices, the animation voices. I've worked with Sesame Street since my children were little, when that's the time they ask actors to, because they know that they're a ready audience and willing audience to do it. And then I got hooked, and I've been doing them. My kids are 24 and 26 now.
And you've also been doing some serious theater. You were in The Matchmaker, the Rose Tattoo.
Yes.
Betty's Summer Vacation, and your own play?
My own one-woman show, yeah. That was serious in some spots, right.
Well, serious, funny,
serious,
but it wasn't
walking
it wasn't
to
a
the
star.
Stage every night was serious. Dead Man Walking is what I'd say. That was a lonely, lonely place to be, a one-person show, but it was
called
something
nude,
important.
Nude, totally nude.
Nude, totally nude.
Were people upset when you didn't take your clothes off?
Shane Greenwood made me a beautiful leotard at the beginning of the show that actually looked like I was nude, really, and Catherine O'Hara gave me the title. I've always depended on the kindness of strangers. That was fantastic. And the last few years, I tried to stay away from comedy, as you said, because when I could stop blaming other people for not hiring me, I thought, okay, well, maybe I've got to change my perspective. And it was really the right thing to do, because now I'm doing this play and not remotely conflicted about what I should be doing. It's with just with great gratitude and a full heart that I do it every night. So, I needed to make that transition.
And Roger, you've been in a whole bunch of movies, including American Gangster. You're in something, a couple of things that are coming up.
Yeah, I'm coming out in April, I believe, is Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo. So that title doesn't get you want to see it. I don't know what will. And then another
drama.
Provocative title called Midnight Meat Train.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I tell you, it's really colorful movies coming out, but they're both fun in their own little way.
And this is an open-ended run, Young Frankenstein.
It is.
Think you'll be playing Leo Bloom somewhere down the line?
where? Somewhere on the road again?
No. I meant that was a bad joke. Anyway, I want to thank you both so much for being with us. It's been a lot of fun talking with you, Roger and Andrea, two of the stars of Young Frankenstein, which is now at the Hilton Theater on West 42nd Street. Also, joining Roger Barton, Andrea Martin, Fred Applegate, Sutton Foster, who is your love interest.
She is.
And
on stage.
Shula Hensley, who is...
My love interest, off stage.
Is he?
No. He's happily married with two children, but a girl can dream, can't she?
And he does have one of the most beautiful voices in the world. If you're going to have a monster, have one who's a bass baritone with the range of Shula Hensley.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Margaret!
Different types, you wear a day coat, pants with stripes, and cutaway coat, perfect